Patrick, I understand that you started college as a music student and only later switched to sculpture. So I wondered how that transition happened and if you still do anything with music.
I started in music and I was studying saxophone and classical guitar, taking lessons, and I was in some ensembles. And I started to feel like I wasn't maybe as invested as a lot of the people that were several years along in the program. And so I started looking at other things, and I experimented in the classics department and looked at archaeology, but finally settled on sculpture. And I think remembering it, I think it was kind of the interaction with materials that really pulled me in and sold me on that. I remember some of the first times welding and kind of seeing the way you're able to move the metal around and really being kind of seduced by that experience. I haven't done a lot of music in the last few years. I was playing mandolin and up to maybe 4 years ago, but I've kind of set that down to focus on sculpture.
For personal pleasure, or did you play with other people? Or
I have played with other people. When I was back in Minnesota, we got second place in the Minnesota jug band competition.
Oh, fun.
We were almost on Prairie Home Companion way back in the day.
Ah.
So I was in some ensembles for fun, but nothing professional or serious.
Understood. Yeah.
Yep.
So describe your work for us. I can say that my impression of looking at your work is there's definitely strong architectural elements to it, and that there's kind of like an explosion, like the inside comes out and the outside goes in, and how you play with these structures. But I want to hear you describe your work.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a really good description and part of how I describe it as well. I think, I consider myself a fabricator, meaning that I spend a lot of time exploring how to control different materials and shape different materials. And all of those materials kind of end up looking like something architectural. I am really interested in creating kind of confused spaces or spaces that, as you say, seem like a bit of an explosion. And I'm sort of interested in the way that events and people and objects interact and kind of create these collisions. And then sort of the imagined space of those collisions become sculptures.
And I understand at some point you also built furniture, functional art.
Yeah, I did. That was back in Minneapolis quite a few years back. I was in Minneapolis after my undergraduate degree, and I just kind of on a whim made a few pieces for another exhibit and sold them all right away. And I was early in my career, so I was, trying to build that patchwork of income that young artists have to do. And so I started making furniture and kind of realized that I could sell whatever I made in that, but also at the same time advertise some of my sculptural work. So the sculptures and the functional work kind of supported each other in a way.
Mm.
I did, eventually I left the furniture behind. I do still make it for myself, but and I do find it as a good kind of resting activity when I'm having a hard time with inspiration in the purely sculptural. Sometimes making a functional object can help to find a spark to, or some direction. But yeah, now I focus kind of solely on sculptural, non-functional objects.
You must have an interesting home.
There's moments that are experimental, I'll put it that way.
Have you ever thought about becoming an architect, or that's not fun enough?
That's sort of the, in my mind, it's maybe the other life that I could have done.
Yeah.
I think when I was in, I remember all those tests they give you in high school, and I don't know how much they're worth, but they were always pointing me in the direction of architecture.
Ah.
But for some reason, I think, the day-to-day of being an architect to me wasn't quite as appealing. I think I really enjoyed the idea of being able to make all of my decisions kind of in an executive way and also, as a sculptor versus an architect, you are kind of active in both the design and building and conceptualization process. And I don't know if it's true or not, but my kind of idea of an architect at that age was that I'd be a little bit more specialized probably in one of those areas. So I think that's why I drifted towards art, but I think I could easily have gone that way too.
Yeah, I envision like Guggenheim and some of these wild buildings. It would have been fun.
Yeah. Well, a lot of those works are sculptures. You know, when you look at Gary's work, he doesn't spend a lot of time thinking about capacity and floor layout. It's kind of, you know, if you see him work on his maquettes, he'll crumple up some materials and then have his workers make that, you know. And so he's got a real improvisational sculptural approach that I think is closer to sculpture than architecture. But
do you have some favorite buildings out there that inspire you when you look at them that, oh, I could play with this?
Yeah, recently there's been a lot of work in kind of parametric design and architecture. And I think I'm going to mispronounce it, but there's an architect, Japanese architect, Shigeru Ban, who makes some really fascinating forms to me that I think, you know, the kind of bending wooden arcs and things that are both kind of organic but geometrical at the same time. I think those things are really compelling to me. Yeah, so there's a ton of architects I'll look at.
So it seems that to get your muse going, you probably have to travel a great deal. And do you walk cities and to get inspired, or how do you come up with your ideas?
For the last 10 years, I would say my process has really been kind of outward looking. I spend a lot of time walking for the purpose of taking photographs. And I sort of think of that as the sketching and conceptualization phase. So I've spent quite an amount of time in China, almost 2 years of the last 10 years in China. And I've done many, many miles kind of looking for either subject matter or just interesting forms and combinations. So, those things don't always find their way into my work directly. Sometimes they become kind of a matrix for another type of expression, but it's definitely part of every work that I've made in the last 10 years.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about those 2 years in China. You had a Fulbright Fellowship, I believe, and I understand you photographed construction sites and temporary structures and tents. Talk about those, 7 months that turned into 2 years and what your project was, what you wanted to do, and what came out of that experience.
Maybe to go back to the beginning on that a little bit, I started going to China for work and went to the Olympics in 2008 to help put together an interactive technology exhibit for another company. And I was really blown away by the amount of construction that was happening and the many levels on which construction would take place, from the very high tech to very improvised, and kind of how those different strata kind of work together. So I wanted to do something that researched and kind of studied that urbanization and that development, and specifically centered around the area of construction. So I proposed the Fulbright project, where I would photograph construction sites specifically, not so much what the projects were going to be, but how the site looked like as it was going along. And so that got me really interested in urbanization and kind of traveling around to places of rapid development in China. And that inevitably kind of brought me out to the western parts of China. So areas that are predominantly ethnically Uyghur or Tibetan, and some of those areas where it's, you know, culturally very distinct. And so I was able to photograph and look at things like the Tibetan Ba, the nomadic yak wool tents, and also a lot of the new building that's going on in places like Kashgar. So, you know, two very distinct groups of people there, but they both were on the edge of that kind of urban expansion that's happening in China.
Tents made out of yak wool. Did you spend any time in those or have interactions with some of these nomads?
I did. Yeah. It's funny. I was always kind of in search of where are people actually using these tents? And it was funny because you would go to festivals and I would see a lot of these yak wool traditional tents, and you'd go to them and they'd be more or less empty. And they were kind of being put up for display in a lot of places. And, you know, I would spend all this time. I took a 16-hour overnight trip to go to the Yushu Horse Festival in Qinghai Province. And it was incredible. I mean, an incredible display of Tibetan culture. But I got there and they said, you know, if you want to see the real show, you got to go 10 more hours by minibus to this outlying region, you know. So I kind of hired a guide to take me out there. And he brought me out. He was Tibetan, and he took me to this other, I think it was a festival more based around horsemanship, but there were dozens of these traditional black tents. And he kind of just walked up to one and said, you know, can we stay in one of your tents for the night? And, you know, these were yak herders, and they were, yeah, of course you can use that one over there. And so we went over, and the first thing we did when we got inside was we pitched his little kind of REI style dome tent inside of the other tent. Oh. So because the other tent, it's not tremendously warm, right? It's a very porous kind of surface. So we had multiple layers of tents going inside of this traditional.
Multiple layers.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Just for warmth. And yeah. And I thought it was kind of a fascinating look at kind of how technology is adopted in places where, you know, from an outside view, you kind of look through the lens of what is authentic and what is traditional, but needs change in those places too. So I don't know, it's just a very interesting mix up of technologies and times.
Do you ever go back, or that what turned into a 2-year project, was that it for you? Or is there something that draws you back, or you would like to go somewhere else?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. That 2 years has been spread out over the course of about 8 trips.
Okay.
So, you know, I've gone back 3 times since my Fulbright for approximately 1 month, each time related to research.
So there was a draw, yeah.
Yeah, there was, and you know, each kind of experience I have there inevitably kind of, you know, in the way that in Yushu they said, if you want to see the real show, you need to go there.
Right.
It does tend to point to new possibilities and new places to look. But to be honest, I think I'm right now a little bit focusing on bringing my lens back home a bit and seeing if some of the ways I've learned to look at things can be applied generally here as well. So I don't have any immediate, well, near-term trips anywhere are difficult, but any plans to go back to China right now.
So let's bring you back home. And yeah. Here in at Western Michigan University, you've been here since 2014. Talk about your work at Western. What is it you teach, and how do you teach it?
Yeah, so I came here in 2014. I'm the assistant professor of sculpture and integrated media. You know, in the sculpture area, we try to look at a really broad range of processes and approaches to making. We definitely do the traditional methods such as welding and mold making and clay work and plaster work and all of those things. But we also try to expose students to things like projected artworks or performative artworks. Right now, we're working on a series of works where students have kind of gone through the hypothetical process of pitching public works. And now they're fabricating those works, and we're going to hopefully install them out on the campus of WMU somewhere. So, you know, it's try to expose people to the broader range of possible so that they can kind of get an idea of the different ways you can be a sculptor.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully they kind of attach themselves to one or more of those things and can figure out their next steps.
And now you have a show, an exhibit coming up in October, I understand. Tell us about that and what we might see there.
Yeah, so I'm installing, really it's the largest work I've made. It's a work related to my trips to Western China and specifically Qinghai Province. I've made a large kind of architectural scale kind of an environment, kind of an object. It's a tangle of wooden beams and steel frameworks and yak wool cloth and some cast fiberglass components. And it's supposed to create a large kind of immersive space for viewers to walk in and out of and kind of experience anecdotal pieces of the places that I've had an opportunity to explore. So it's exciting to me because it's really an environment, and at the scale it's at, you know, people will experience it with their whole body, and they're going to walk through it, and they're able to kind of respond to the tactile qualities of the different materials. So I'm really excited to be working at that scale, and this will be the first time I've seen it together. So we're putting that together in the Monroe Brown Gallery in October in the Richmond Center.
So is this one huge piece, or are there several pieces?
Yes, it's meant to be one object, but it's made of kind of 8 or 9 subcomponents.
Okay.
So, you know, for instance, one component might be roughly spherical in shape and made of 3 interlocking Douglas fir rings. So I've taken some Douglas fir and bent it in these huge arcs, and now they can create these subcomponents that are 10, 11 feet tall, I mean, about the same wide. You know, I've got a kind of loose organization of them, but I'm thinking with the way the space is in there, I'll have an opportunity to kind of play with the overall arrangement of them a bit. And this piece can kind of modulate a bit to the environment that it's in, stretch out, I guess.
Well, thank you so much for spending some time with us, Patrick. I'm fascinated to see this piece and walk in and out of it.
Yeah, thank you so much for the chance to talk about it. I can't wait to show you the piece.